So Darwin was lost into what would drive evolution. And it was very interesting because in his efforts to understand what was going on, Darwin happened to pick up a book on population by a man called Thomas Robert Malthus. Robert Malthus lived almost 100 years before Darwin. And probably some of you may have heard of Malthus. He was an economic philosopher. And it's interesting because Malthus's father was part of the Age of Enlightenment and really frequented with people like Rousseau, the philosopher from France, or Locke, the philosopher from England, and talked this very airy-fairy at that time, Enlightenment ideas. And it's interesting because sometimes, as sons do, the sons take a different tack than their father. And in fact, Robert Malthus took a very dark view of the world compared to his father. And in fact, Robert Malthus coined or became what was called the pessimist and looked at the world in a pessimistic way. And you say, well, how did he, take on this very negative view of the world and become a pessimist while his father was such a great optimist? And the answer is that in a debate with his father, he created a logical construct of predicting about the nature of plants and animals. And he said, you know, when you look at a farmer growing vegetation, that vegetation reproduces at an arithmetic rate. What does that mean? That means like, well, if the farmer this year gets a bushel of wheat from his land and then really works hard next year, he might get 2 bushels of wheat. And then in a third year, if he really puts in some extra effort and really works even harder, he might get 3 bushels of wheat from that same land. And again, the next year, with more effort, maybe 4 bushels. So that he was watching that vegetation, such as wheat, can increase like 1 bushel, 2 bushels, 3 bushels, 4 bushels, 5 bushels over time, arithmetically progressive. But then at the same time, he said, you know, but the animals on that farm don't do that. He said that the animals mate and they double the population. So he said, so you start with a cow and a bull, and you have 2 animals. They mate. Next year, you have 4 animals. Then they mate. At some point, you have 8 animals. And then they mate, and then you have 16 animals. And what he started to recognize is, while vegetation was increasing 1 at a time, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, animals were doubling each time, so that the population of animals was not arithmetic, but geometric. Start with 2, then go to 4, then go to 8, then to 16, then to 32. Well, there's a problem in this, because if you put this on a chart and compare the growth of vegetation and the reproduction of animals, at some point you start to realize this doesn't work. And the reason is that the animals' bravado in their reproduction far outstrips the ability to feed them. So he came up with the reality that, oh my God, that if animals keep reproducing at this rate, inevitably there must be a struggle for food because there's going to be a lot more animals than food. And then he created the concept that there's a struggle for an existence, and that he suggested that only the strongest and maybe perhaps the most ruthless animals would be capable of surviving. And he also brought in the concept that in order to equalize and level this population growth, nature has to bring things into our world such as epidemics or pestilence or plagues or even famine, the great equalizers that will knock out the animal and people population, knock them back so that they don't get into the point of using all the food and then facing that inevitable struggle. So the essence of Malthus's concern wasn't dealing with things getting worse, but actually with things getting better. Meaning, what if nations curtailed warfare? What if we eliminated poverty and disease was cured? This would actually create a worse situation because it would allow more people to survive, also then create the struggle for survival because food level would not be able to support them. Well, Malthus's work played an important role in Darwin's theory. Darwin himself was still lagging. And it was 22 years now since his return. He still hadn't really come to a theory of evolution. And while he was just holding on, figuring he's got all the time in the world because that's his project, one day he was blown out of the water. In June of 1858, Darwin receives a package in the mail from a naturalist by the name of Alfred Russel Wallace, another Englishman who was actually working in Borneo at the time. Now, Alfred Russel Wallace was different than Darwin because Darwin was an upper-class, rich, sophisticated person in the Victorian strata of England, and Alfred Russel Wallace was a commoner. In fact, he became a naturalist to make a way for a living. He went out into these strange worlds to collect animals and specimens and sell them as a means of survival. So what was interesting in Wallace's own work out in the field in Borneo, he saw the same kinds of variations of species from one to the other that Darwin saw in the Galapagos. But Wallace started to recognize from his own scientific insights that there was a reason for this evolutionary process. And therefore, Wallace wrote a manuscript on evolution entitled On the Tendency of Varieties to Depart Indefinitely from the Original Type. This is what he included in the envelope when he sent it to Darwin with a note. He said to Darwin, he said, listen, do me a favor. Would you please show this paper to Charles Lyell, the preeminent scientist? And if he thinks this is worthy of publication, I would like to publish it. Well, I want to tell you, this particular package stunned Darwin, because here he was thinking, well, I got all the time in the world to figure out a theory of evolution. And what happens? A theory of evolution comes completely written, and it was from Wallace. And this was a big problem. And you say, well, what was the big problem? And the problem was, well, Darwin was a protege of Lyell. And all of a sudden, Lyell was going to have to face the reality as some commoner just upstaged the upper-class Darwin with a completely well-written theory. In fact, a far better theory than even what Darwin ultimately wrote. And Lyell and Darwin were very upset by this situation. So it was real interesting because Lyell had to juggle things around because he didn't want the priority of the research taken away from Darwin. So they conspired with another eminent scientist, Joseph Hooker, the botanist at the time, and created what they referred to as a delicate arrangement, that they took the paper from Wallace and submitted it with an abstract about evolution from Darwin. But they didn't say a paper from Wallace and an abstract from Darwin. They introduced it to the Linnaean Society meeting a month later as a theory of evolution by Charles Darwin, and they allowed Wallace a secondary honor of being cited as the junior author. Well, scientifically, this is an infamy in science, because science is always based on the reality that the first person who comes up with the work is the one who is the senior author. And obviously, Wallace got displaced. And he was just this commoner. And you might say, oh, well, on the surface, this little bit of skullduggery might just be trivial in regard to the history of humanity. But let Steve and I assure you of some very important fact. This incident had profound reverberations that still are impacting us today. And you say, well, what difference did it make if Wallace or Darwin received priority for the theory? And the answer is, the difference is the epitome of what is the difference between a glass being half full or a glass half empty? And here's what the difference really comes down to and why it impacts us to this very day, because we're talking about how beliefs create stories and then how we shape our life based on the story. Well, let's go back and say, what was the driving force that pushed evolution? Well, interestingly enough, both Alfred Russel Wallace and Thomas Malthus agreed that selection process was the elimination of the weak elements in a society in their struggle for life. So they were talking about the elimination of the weakest. Darwin put his own spin on this. Rather than talking about the elimination of the weakest, Darwin emphasized it was the survival of the strongest. And you might say, well, what's the difference, the elimination of the weakest or the survival of the strongest? And the answer is very profound, because think about it this way. Darwin came from Victorian England, where they had already recognized there was an upper class and a lower class. Wallace was saying that evolution was due to the action on the lower class, sorting out the weaker elements. Darwin flipped that around and said, no, evolution is really based on the upper class, the strongest ones that give the qualities of that survival to these species. So Darwin's theory emphasized that it was good to have an upper class and a lower class. He actually took the story of the day, the philosophy in upper and lower class, and made it part of a theory of evolution that justified that an upper class should exist and that a lower class is just a feeder later and that they should, you know, not really be counted as very much. And so the difference is what? And the difference is this. Well, think of a world if Wallace's ideas actually prevailed. And then it says, then what would be our motivation today? And the answer is, well, we would strive to not be the weakest. And then we say, yeah, but Darwin's ideas prevail. So what does that mean? Oh, today we strive to be the fittest. And then look at the world differences as what it would take if all we had to do was not be the weakest versus what we have to do to become the strongest. It is profoundly different. It's the same story, but two different perspectives. And why this becomes important is it really emphasizes the nature of what we've been trying to say. It's our perspective, our perception of the story that shapes the reality. So what do we live in a world today? We live in a Darwinian world that's based on what? Well, the premise of a struggle for survival. Why should there be a struggle? Oh, because organisms such as animals will outstrip the ability of vegetation to feed them. So inevitably, life is a struggle where Darwin emphasizes it's based on the survival of the fittest. So we take that survival of the fittest and then we apply it to our world that we live in. So it's an interesting change because in that survival of the fittest, then the previous civilization, the paradigm of monotheism, said, oh, we should live by the laws of the scripture and learn to live in harmony. And now, in the acceptance of Darwin's theory as a source of life and science taking over the Basel paradigm, the primary belief now that Darwin contributes to this new paradigmatic view based on materialism is that life is a struggle and that we must go out there and fight with each other. So rather than living by the laws of the scripture, we are now living by the laws of the jungle.